So we have discussed the Panopticon before. The Panopticon originally was a prison design by Jeremy Bentham in which the guard tower would be in the center and would be dark, and the cells would be in a cylinder surrounding the guard tower, and they're all light so that the guards can see into every corner of the prison cells, and the prisoners can't see into the dark, and so they can't tell if they are being surveilled or not. So the surveillance is always possible and never verifiable. And this is actually this has been adopted by many prisons and is in fact, in terms of prison design, there's one good thing about it that I have to say before we move on, which is my students, when I used to teach at a prison 15 years ago or 18 years ago or whatever, they, rates of assault and sexual assault are down a bit in prisons because of Panopticon designs. Because before, you might be able to catch somebody, like in Shawshank Redemption, they catch somebody in the laundry storage room or someplace where guards can't see, and then they can assault you. And there were lots of nooks and crannies in older style prisons, but the newer prisons, it's a bit better on that. Anyway, that said, the real question about a panopticon is not merely that it is a prison design, but that it's a design for a way to control society. And where, again, surveillance is always possible, never verifiable. And when that's the case, what happens is people end up policing themselves. And they, because you never know when you could be caught. And it's interesting. You know, I've read so much. I'm very interested in sort of history of crime and history of policing of various sorts and history of the death penalty, etc. And it's, you know, it has become, you know, 300 years ago, somebody could commit some horrible crime in one town and they could move one town over and there's no fingerprint technology. There's no, you know, computers to be able to analyze records. The difference back then, of course, is that the new community was probably small enough that you could move into it and you're immediately known as a stranger and not trusted. Whereas if you have a city of 1 million people, somebody new moves into town, you don't know if they're a new person or not. Anyway, so with the increased surveillance, we always have to be, well, this is true for stoplights. I mean, these days, a cop doesn't have to see you, but they have those cameras up there that if you run a stoplight, you know, it can take a picture. That surveillance is always possible, never verifiable. And this brings us to the internet, which is, I think, the most powerful tool for a panopticon ever in many ways. That I was just talking to a friend yesterday about how when you go on the internet, basically you have to trust. We're talking about the difference between ISPs and VPNs. And he said it's who you trust. With an ISP, when you go on, your ISP could record every place you go and every email you send. It can record all of this, and you have to trust them not to release it. And what you're doing with a VPN is basically shifting the trust from your ISP to a virtual private network or whatever it is VPN stands for, that basically they will then hold that for you. So you're trusting a different distant entity. And the point here is not to get into a discussion of which is better, but the point is that you can be watched, which is how you can go searching for a pair of pants, and then you, 5 minutes later, you go to Facebook and there is an ad for a pair of pants. This is instead of Santa Claus watching you, it's Facebook and ESPN and your ISP and the VPN and everybody else and the government. The point is that they, economic and governmental entities, can watch what you do, and it's very transparent. And so that's all an extraordinary means of social control, even though most of it is we don't think about because it's been so normalized. But there's something else I want to bring to this, which I am really late to the party on having heard about the Ash experiment. And among some people, the Ash experiment is as famous as the Stanford Prison experiment and the Milgram experiment. So the Ash experiment, what they did is they would have five people in a room, one subject, and supposedly five subjects, but in reality, one subject and four actors. And they would show them a picture that had on the left side of a piece of paper was a bar of a certain length. And then on the right side would be three bars of different lengths, one of which is the same length as the one on the left. And the other two are clearly different lengths. And then they would ask the supposed subjects which of the ones on the right is the same length as the ones on the left. It's very obvious which answer is correct. And the actors would lie. And so say the answer is two, and say the subject is sitting in the third position. The first person says it's number three. Second person says it's number three. Third person says, no, it's number two. And the fourth person says it's number three, and the fifth person says it's number three. And it's extraordinary to watch. You can watch videos of this. It's extraordinary to watch the look on the person's face. And they're very confused. And the first time they will do this, the person might give the correct answer. The second time they do it, the person might give the correct answer. And the third time and so on, the person's giving the wrong answer. And what this has to do with the panopticon is not only is the internet a magnificently powerful tool for surveillance, it is also the most powerful tool ever for enforcing social conformity. We can think, oh, there's lots of these various opinions out there, but what happens is that people will form hug boxes and there will be the creation of these. No matter what your bizarre conspiracy is, no matter what your fetish is, you will be able to find people to reinforce it. So you have these extremely small numbers of massive, just utter mega corporations controlling discourse and telling us that 2 + 2 = 5, and telling us that there is a fundamental difference between Republicans and Democrats, and telling us that the penis can be a female organ, and telling us that healthy women's breasts are a deformity, as the California Insurance Commissioner is now saying. You can have this nonsense spewed at us, and we resist, just like the character in the Ash experiment, or the subject in the Ash experiment, resisted the first few times around, but everybody else is saying it must be true. Not everybody. I mean, gosh, the experts know, don't they? And so you can have serious conversations about how a military invasion is bringing freedom and democracy, or you can have serious conversations about how cutting down the forest is actually improving the forest health. It doesn't matter what subject we're talking about. There is this madness can be propagated and incessantly pounded in a way that Bernays and other of the early users of propaganda and early people in television and radio could never have dreamed of, the panopticon. So back in 2002 or 3, George Drafin and I wrote this book called Welcome to the Machine, Science, Surveillance, and the Culture of Control. And in some ways, it's my most horrifying book because it's just about their capacity to surveil and control. But honestly, the stuff we wrote about in that book is now accepted as just part of everyday life. And a phrase that I've mentioned before in some of these videos, but I keep thinking about all the time, is the Doobie Brothers album, What Were Once Vices Are Now Habits. And what were once horrors are now part of everyday life. And what were once considered lies are now everyday truths. It's when you combine the panopticon where surveillance is always possible, never verifiable, and where people can lose their jobs because of wrongthink, where people can be arrested for wrongthink, that combine that with the capacity of a small number of corporations to control discourse, and it's no wonder things are as crazy as they are.